Welcome to MGO Podcast 10.32. What sorcery is this? Sporting events in June? Oh my god! So we went and we did the EDSBS podcast on Friday.
Okay.
And before it, there was baseball. It was the strangest.
Yeah, we invited the Southerners.
The Southerners came up and were like, hey.
Let's go watch baseball.
We're doing baseball. And yeah. I think they have a completely wrong idea of like how frequently that happens.
Well, I asked you, when was the last time you've watched this much baseball?
Yes. And it might, like, I had, like, a kind of a hissy fit after the strike, and I was like, I'm out on baseball.
It might were you, be like, 12?
Yes, but that's when you have those kind of, like, hissy fits when you're 12.
Okay.
And, you know, it's been a while.
We know, because anytime we try to mention, you know, our little baseball professional teams, you're like, stop talking baseball!
Well, no, the best part is on Slack, is that anytime baseball comes up on our Slack conversation, Brian usually starts with something like, baseball is dumb, or it's random, or something, and everyone's like,
baseball
yeah,
is random.
Yeah.
But that's
it is, and it's kind of stupid, and we should watch other things.
That's,
and now Michigan baseball is good.
All right.
Now Michigan baseball is good, and everybody's like breaking out their inner baseball nerd on just
We're
like,
supposed to introduce ourselves.
We are. All right, so I'm Seth Fisher.
This is Dave.
Dave. I don't have a last name, just Dave.
And I'm Brian. You're the one with the last name.
Yeah, I guess I am.
And we're talking.
I don't have a last name on the site.
About baseball, and you know, I'm making a good faith effort here. I just want everyone to
you
know.
You wrote
that.
A really good article.
It was all right.
And you've had a couple of pretty good roundtables.
But before we get into it, we should thank our sponsors, which are of course Underground Printing and the Bow Store, Homeshore Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, where we are currently, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Peak Wealth Management, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, Lantana Hummus, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, and Fuego Box. So I mentioned that I'm not really a baseball guy, so we thought we would get the guy who has the cool and interesting baseball takes on Twitter to join us, Colin Johnson. How you doing?
Hey guys, I'm doing all right. I'm surprised to hear that I have interesting baseball takes, but I'm okay with that.
I mean, you're talking about like the slider. You have like you abbreviate things, and I whenever someone like has abbreviations, I'm like that guy probably knows what he's talking about.
Were you Googling his abbreviations?
I thought SL was probably slider.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Yes.
And FB is in fact fastball.
SB.
FB.
FB.
That's right.
All right, yeah, that's
right. SB is stolen base normally.
Fairly intuitive.
Yeah.
But so Michigan has gone on this run, and I think, you know, I had kind of vaguely had them on the radar. They were supposed to be pretty good before the season. They had kind of a disappointing start, and then they had the long undefeated streak. They have the hiccups at the end of the season, and then we're in the last four teams in the tournament, which kind of says something about how hard it is to get your schedule strength up, and you're kind of in a position where they get swept by Texas Tech in that series early in the year, and then they don't have a lot of opportunities to make it up.
It's hard to do against Binghamton.
Yeah. They're kind of like in a Gonzaga situation where like Gonzaga plays this monster non-conference schedule, and if they beat Duke, they get to be a one seed, and if they lose to Duke, they're like a seven.
Right. Well, if they lose to like a St. Mary's along the way too, then they're in real trouble.
Right. So it's kind of a situation where they're in at the end of the field, but they're clearly dangerous, and they've really proven that ability over the course of the tournament.
Yeah. No, I mean, they've played really, I mean, there's a number of areas. I think that pitching obviously is what people are going to be drawn to, but they've also, like, the first couple games I went to, I'm watching as guys come up to the plate and, like, this guy's a pretty good batting average. And batting average isn't the end all be all in baseball, but yeah. It kind of tells you something. And then the next guy comes up and he also has a decent batting average. And we're getting lower and lower in the lineup and, like, everybody's above 260. And I'm like, oh. So it's not just a pitching team. Like, they can all kind of hit.
Well, I mean, the last game kind of told you that they can hit, too.
Well, sure, but I mean,
Texas Tech was pretty beat up at that.
This is a couple months ago.
Yeah. I mean, Colin, had you been following the team particularly closely before the postseason rolled around?
No, they became important when it kind of, I think everybody else decided they became important. And, I mean, once they're easy to watch on TV, that just makes, you know, being a fan a lot easier.
Yeah.
I was going to say that, Michigan does swing the bat pretty well, but they're certainly not anywhere near kind of the teams that we have been facing. It's certainly the case that, you know, Donovan, I think, is hitting like 270 or something like that. And he's obviously down the lineup. But, it's usually the case that the Vandy guy or the Texas Tech guy will be hitting, 280, 290, something like that. It's just the case that the offensive environment in college ball is a little bit more, it's just higher than you might be used to watching Major League Baseball.
So, I mean, you've kind of gotten through four, five, six, seven games watching this team. What are the things that kind of stand out to you about it?
It's, everyone knows that it's definitely pitching. But in particular, I think that, Henry and Kauffman, to some extent, are kind of like, mirror images. They have very similar stuff. They have very similar approaches. And they do what they can, but they're definitely kind of, they're not 95, 96 mile an hour guys. They're 90, 92. But the command is really there. And they're three pitch pitchers. So they have a slider and they have a changeup, each. And that's really important when you're, going through the lineup, right? Traditionally, the way you get, same-handed batters out is you've got your fastball and your breaking ball. It's either a curveball or in particular slider. Sliders are, really good at, attacking same-handed batters. And then opposite-handed batters, you go after with the changeup, fastball changeup. To have all three is a thing that, in kind of prospect circles, that's a kind of a big deal because it means that in a major league environment, you can actually get through a lineup and you might be a starting caliber pitcher as opposed to a reliever.
But in addition to those two guys, there's Criswell, who's only been coming out of the pen. And I mean, did he like strike out six in three innings against Texas Tech? I mean, he was a first team All Big Ten guy as a starting pitcher. And from what we've seen from him as a reliever in the tournament, he's been electric.
He's got serious stuff. I mean, he's kind of my favorite guy to watch. I know that's a little bit anathema considering how well Henry and Kauffman have pitched. But anybody who really brings velocity, I really enjoy watching. And that slider when it's on is pretty serious business too. I think that when he gets. I think it's kind of evident that he really thrives in a relief role. My understanding is he was actually a reliever last year, so it's not that surprising that he's been able to have success there. It'll be interesting to see if what happens with his velocity as he's asked to throw more innings. They've been able to shelter him for a while, so maybe he can really, ramp up and be the guy that we've seen him be. But, you can see these guys, I think, as the kind of tournament has gone on, they dip up and they dip down in their velocity. That's definitely something that's new to them. They're still trying to figure it out and be consistent.
And then when Michigan gets to bat, it just seems like they must be one of the most annoying teams in the entire country when there's a guy on first. It's like we've just seen guys lose their heads and it doesn't really seem to matter who's on base.
Yeah, they're definitely a pain in the ass team to play because as good as Nwogu and Brewer are, they really are kind of a more 1-9 lineup as opposed to, Vandy, who that's going to throw Bladet and Martin out there.
Yeah, and it seems we've kind of talked about this ourselves and on the site a little bit. It seems like Michigan is really a heavy analytics team. They've been putting on some shifts. I remember particularly in the Florida State game, there were a couple of balls that off the bat, you're like, okay, that's a single up the middle, and they were essentially right at the second baseman. And they had some outfield shifts on. They've been playing no doubles in kind of strange situations. But, it really kind of seems like Michigan is trying to take advantage of all the little edges you can take advantage of that you need to if you're a northern team trying to compete with recruiting powerhouses.
Yeah, they definitely have, it seems like they really paid attention to detail in those kind of David strategies. You you really don't see, at least it doesn't seem like it, you know, Texas Tech didn't seem to be doing the same kinds of shifts. And if they were, they, I don't know, their guys weren't fast enough to get up to the ground balls that they needed to. We, to some extent, kind of really won those games when we won them on backup, you know, like balls falling in when balls haven't fell in for the other team.
Well, and there was the, they put a shift on against Kerr and he just kind of singled it. He just bunted the third base line.
Gorgeous.
Well, that's beautiful.
That, I mean, that hasn't really taken off too much yet, but like you see it from time to time now watching Major League Baseball where it, shifts are becoming pretty prominent.
Yeah.
And now you can, I mean, if you can bunt a ball, which, you know, is becoming a dying art, but if you can do it, you can get a single pretty easily because the third baseman is basically playing almost where the shortstop is.
Yeah. And there was one thing that, like, Kauffman was in a real tough inning early in the second Texas Tech game, and their coach laid down a bunt. They had first and second and nobody out, and Kauffman was really, really scuffling. And I think they got like one run across in that inning, but like at that point, I couldn't imagine just giving away an out like that. And I don't think I've seen Bakic call for anything in that realm.
He has. It's been, you know,
rare.
A few weeks since, but I mean, towards the end of the regular season, Big Ten tournament, you'd see two on, nobody out, and he'd bunt people over. Now, it might be certain situations, and it might be like really tight games later on, and then that, I think that changes it a little bit, but, you know, I think he still does some of that, which has been interesting to me because bunting is usually frowned upon by analytics.
I mean, there are situations in which, like, you need a run, and that improves your shot because you have a productive out, but, you know, the kind of, especially in college baseball, where it seems like the, you know, you have aluminum bats. I know they kind of tuned them down, so they're more like wood these days. But, you know, those batting averages that you thought seemed pretty high are pretty high, like, for a major league level. But as Colin mentioned, it is kind of a more offensive environment.
Yeah.
Especially because, I mean, you hit a ball in the field and anything can happen, it seems like.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, I don't remember seeing as many like battery errors, like wild pitches and pass balls and stuff like that, that you kind of, when you watch Major League Baseball, you kind of take as almost a given. Like if you have two wild pitches in a game, in a Major League game, you're like, oh, what's going on? Now it's tough to go four or five innings without seeing a couple.
Yeah. Well, and in the second Texas Tech game, they brought in their major dad reliever and he cut off a throw from the infield.
Yeah, that was a very Manny Ramirez moment there.
I was like, I don't know what's going on in this sport, but I know that that is not what's supposed to happen.
Part of the thing for Michigan is that like the bunt is like the punt of baseball, right? Where you just it made more sense when you were playing small ball all the time and winning games 2-1, and Michigan gets into those games a lot more often just because of how they're built.
Yeah, and because of the running, I mean, they had like the stat that, like, the Texas Tech catcher had thrown out 19% of the runners who had run against them, and that's what's a typical major league number, Colin?
I want to say it's more like, I think the success cutoff rate, something like 75%. So I'm going to guess that, you know, it's like 30%, 40%.
Yeah, 40 is probably a little generous unless you're like good, but yeah, if you're throwing out 20% in the Major League Baseball, like, people are going to be running.
So I think. You know, that's a something that Michigan has really tried to take advantage of, is the fact that, you know, you have these college catchers, and even on really good college teams, maybe they're not the defensive stalwarts that you might see in the major.
Yeah, college teams actually tend to use a lot more, they rotate guys through, so they have to use their best hitters all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, your catcher might be your left fielder, or, like, a catcher and a DH are switching off. Like, they get hitters first, and then they're teaching them how to catch.
Well, it's been striking because other teams get on base, and like Michigan isn't thrown over to first. They're just like, I'm just going to pitch, and nobody steals on them. And I don't know if Donovan is a great defensive catcher in that regard. It doesn't seem like it.
I've seen him throw out some guy a few.
He has a lot of pass balls, I guess. But
yeah, I mean, that seems like college baseball.
Yeah,
but the interesting thing that I want to bring up that you were talking about earlier with their positioning and stuff is so. Like, they're basically playing with three center fielders.
Yeah.
So so when you have that kind of athleticism and speed, which obviously helps on the base paths, but also you can play in kind of whatever you want on defense because guys can get to a lot of places. And we saw those two bad errors in the UCLA series where Brewer just slipped and the ball kind of like dropped in and then the drop in left field. But like, that was a weird environment because like the weather was, I mean, it was very wet. The marine layer, and like I bet he lost that in the lights.
I mean, it's still, man,
and so that's just
you
different
lose
though.
That third game because of that, and you're That's like a Buckner kind of, but Michigan didn't. So it's all just like, oh, that happened.
But I think those are aberrations with this athletic outfield.
Yeah, I mean, their defense has been excellent, like, compared to the rest of the field, except for that one game against UCLA.
Yeah.
And there haven't been really any, like, head-slapping errors.
And they've also made a ton of plays. Like, Akeo Thomas has been phenomenal at second base. Like, you're talking about his shifts, but, I mean, he's made multiple diving layouts. They turn the double play really well. And even, like, Kerr and Nelson on the corners are, like, diving and making plays that are, you know, on the fringe of what you would expect their range to be.
Well, that comes back to how Bagich has put this roster together, because he doesn't get a lot of the guys who've been traveling, and it costs a ton of money to do that.
Yeah.
So, like, he's going after players who are athletes first, and, like, some of these guys have 247 recruiting
football profiles.
Right. Like, Akeo, I think, was
it's
a
like
defensive
the B-line has never been an assistant coach of baseball.
Right, right.
It's the fact that these guys were football recruits. But, you know, it is interesting that, you know, I think Vandy does this a lot too, but Michigan has the Go Blue guarantee, where if you don't make the median and you're an in-state student, you don't pay any tuition. And that's really important in baseball, because you only get 11.7 scholarships for a 27-person team.
Which is just, I don't even know where to begin with that. But
well, Title IX is where you begin with it. So, I mean, that's just one of the effects of that. And we can talk about the positive impact of Title IX, but that's one of the negatives, I
think. Yeah, yeah.
But so Michigan, when we went into this World Series, I was like, we're not ranked outsiders here. I mean, we wouldn't be favored to win this thing, but they're in with a chance. They have three frontline starters that I think go toe-to-toe with anybody in the country, and then Tommy Henry against Florida State. Like,
you get a day like that from your pitcher.
Well,
man.
I mean, look what he did the weekend before when he was like basically just out of the hospital.
Yeah, I mean, his last two starts are probably, what, top 5 in the history of Michigan baseball.
There's no way to look it up, so yes.
I mean, all you got to do is go back to like the 3 College World Series they've been in and be like, yeah, there's one shutout against Colorado State.
Right, right, and, right.
Like, it's not that hard, because you don't have a huge history here.
We do have a very long history here.
It's
yeah,
true.
Yeah. But not, yeah.
But not a huge one.
The amplitude is not quite there. He could have been striking out major leaguers with that stuff that day.
I mean, what was your take on that, Colin? What did you think of his performance against FSU?
Henry? I mean, I am more kind of like a stuff watcher, and but to me, it was I felt like I kind of finally started to understand why he's like as good as he is. You know, the way that he really paints corners, the way that and you know, command is. I mean, as we've seen, the entire tournament is just iffy, right? Like, you know, Texas Tech couldn't find a dude to get the ball over the plate and throw it hard. We have, you know, just a handful of guys who can do it. And then Henry is serious business. He really spots each of those 3 pitches and both sides of the plate. That's major league stuff.
Yeah, he's, what was he, I don't know if it's a second or a third round pick. It's like a compensatory round.
Yeah.
People
they're both in the 70s.
Yeah.
Carl and Henry are both in the 70s, 74 and 77, I think.
So those are like slots where like those guys aren't going to come back next year, right?
I think their slot money was like $500K or $600K. They're almost certainly gone. That would be a huge surprise for them to come back.
And Brewer's pretty much gone, I would say.
That's what the people have been saying, yeah, that he's a one and done.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Well, no, he's a junior.
Yeah, but he was a JUCO.
Oh.
Yeah, and juniors are, in baseball, you're a junior and done.
Yeah, right.
So, I think we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back, and we're going to start looking at Vanderbilt, kind of the Death Star of college baseball.
Two segments about baseball?
Well, I mean,
this is great.
It's June. Come on, man.
This is great.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Eufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In most good movies, there's a hero and a coach. You are the hero like Luke Skywalker. We are your coach like Yoda. It's Nick Hopwood from
Peak Wealth Management,
your MGO financial coach. Learn more at peakwm.com/MGOblog. I'm the CFP who coaches people just like you. We both hate going to weddings on Michigan football Saturdays. And just like Luke, most of you need a little bit of coaching and guidance. And to qualify as a coach needs to have empathy and authority. Yoda has empathy because he's been battling the Sith for hundreds of years. We have empathy because we've seen people we care about making terrible financial decisions, putting their retirement at risk. Yoda has authority because he's arguably the most powerful Jedi of all time. We have authority because we have an economics degree from Michigan, we are a CFP, we have 20 years in the business, and we manage over $145 million of client assets. And we've seen hundreds of cases. You are the hero, and we are your financial coach. If you're ready for a second opinion about your financial future, check out peakwm.com/amgoblog today.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
Michigan is in the championship series against Vanderbilt, and unfortunately, Vanderbilt was able to come back late on Friday and beat Louisville without having to go to a climactic winner-take-all game, which would have been nice for pitching depth purposes.
And for, you know, basketball revenge tour purposes.
I'm not really high on revenge tour. I think I'm...
We just don't have anything with the Doors, man. Like,
we do!
What's our thing with the Doors?
They used to employ James Franklin.
Okay.
We beat David Price that one year.
I loved it when they had Franklin. They should have kept Franklin.
Well,
I loved Vandy beating SEC teams. It was great.
That was enjoyable.
It was. But this is the team that I think would have been favored even if UCLA was in the College World Series. The betting markets have been absurdly on Vandy. Like, I think they were like minus 180 even before they made it to the championship series.
I mean, in the preseason, they were number one. Like, they're the expected to win the championship this year.
Right, and, like, there's nobody in college baseball that's loaded top to bottom like Vandy. I think, Colin, you tweeted something out about their lineup 1-9.
Yeah, they're scary. The top of the lineup is really serious business. It's Austin Martin and...
Bledinger.
J.J. Bleday.
The Bledinger.
And...
What?
That's, yeah, that's the nickname they have for him.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's weird.
You got to call him something, I guess. yeah, so Bourdais went fourth overall in the MLB draft, and Austin Martin looks like he's probably going to be a top 10 pick next year. Their third best guy is still just a tad bit off from those two. And then the rest of the lineup is still, like, you know, pretty clearly better than Michigan man for man. Not a great situation for us.
And they're pitching. They have Kumar Rocker, who had a 19 strikeout no hitter against Duke. And I thought I saw that he was tracking towards being a really high pick in next year's draft.
He's a freshman, so he's going to go two years. Yeah. You know, he's Tracy Rocker's son.
Which is, it's weird that his name is Kumar, because I was like, oh, he's an Indian guy.
Right.
And then I was like,
no. No, he's an SEC football player's son. But he looks like, when you look at him, he actually wears 80 because his coach thought he looked like a tight end.
So he's kind of in the Nwogu.
He's, yeah, 6'4", 255.
All their pitchers are huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're
Mason
all good.
Hickman is like 6'6 or 6'7. He looks like an offensive tackle.
I mean, the thing that's really leapt off, you know, the screen when it comes to pitching depth is that it seems like all of these schools have just guys who can come off the bench. Like, there was that, like, submariner that Florida State had. And, like, we got deep into the UCLA bullpen, and they were, like, just throwing out the guys out there for, like, 70 pitches.
Right.
It was just like, what is going on?
I think Michigan's bullpen was all right throughout a lot of the year. But after that, like, second Creighton game, that meltdown, it's been a little bit different going down there.
Well, and I think for them, it might be a bit of a culture shock to, like, go against Big Ten batters and then come up against these guys for
Major League batters. Yeah, or future Major League batters.
Yeah. I mean, the way baseball's set up, like you said, like, you have 11.5 scholarships, so, like, they have to these big schools, they'll go out, and, like, the recruiting is actually a big deal, and they follow their recruiting. Like, Rocker, I think, was a top 10 overall guy this year. And it makes a huge difference because you're going to have these guys for 3 years, and you're not going to have them after they're junior. Like, they never get seniors back.
So, have you looked at their pitching staff at all, Colin?
Yeah, I mean, I look into it a little bit. I mean, you're dead on with Rocker. He's got pretty scary stuff. He's going to be probably 92 plus for sure, maybe as high as 94, 95, depending on, you know, the day that he's having. And he's just got an absolute wipeout slider. I don't know about his changeup situation, but the slider is so good, from what I can tell, that it really doesn't matter, like, side of the plate batting from.
The slider looks like a circle change almost. Like, it goes down to 84 miles per hour, which is like 10 miles less than he's normally throwing.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that
means. It's killer.
I mean, if you can throw your off-speed stuff for strikes, it's forget it.
Yeah. I mean, so it kind of sounds like what Michigan is going to have to get is they're going to have to get similar performances from their starting pitching, and not like Kauffman against Texas Tech Part 2, but Kauffman Part 1, and then they're just going to have to get Henry to replicate what he managed to do against FSU.
And that's what they've gotten in the last 2 weekends. And they've needed it, clearly. But they've gotten it, you know, it's just like, you know, with baseball, sometimes you have your stuff, sometimes you don't quite as much, as we've seen over the past, like, week or so. And, you know, if they get it, yeah, I mean, they have a chance, but...
So is this a situation where Criswell is going to start one of these games? Do you go Henry Criswell?
He would have. Off? I mean, they don't have enough. I mean, who else? It's probably not going to be Walker Cleveland. And he's been, like, their fourth starter.
I mean, it's possible you get to game three and you're just like, I mean, what if you're up two runs in game one, and are you going to not bring in Criswell? Are you going to bring in Kaiser?
Well, that's when the decision comes.
Right? I mean,
you got to win two, you know?
Yeah. What are you doing, Colin?
I think, honestly, I don't know that Michigan has a guy past Kaiser that I would trust against the Vandy lineup. I mean, it really is, like you said, a culture shock. Like, they can't expect to hold down the lineup, and I don't know who Vandy's going to throw out that we would be able to kind of get those runs back from. Specifically, Vandy's got a really left-handed heavy lineup, so I would definitely go Henry first game, and it sounds like that's the way that Michigan's decided to go. I think that's what Backer said. And then the second game, I would go with whoever has the better changeup, and I think probably right now that's likely Kauffman. And Criswell, you hope, you know, you hold in reserve, and you hope that you don't have to use him until game two. But I mean, that's you know, some easier bailout guy would be my play.
Does it bother you that Kaufman apparently only throws his changeup about 10% of the time?
I think that's kind of a handedness thing. I know he definitely prefers his slider, but I've heard Fetter talk on the WTK podcast. He was on a lot before the UCLA series, and he said that he really liked Criswell's changeup, but I haven't seen him throw it, so I don't know. Like, the one that I've seen is the one that I'll take, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so Michigan is obviously an underdog here. I mean, how severe of an underdog do you think they are?
I would say that Michigan probably has at least a slight advantage on the mound, at least as far as their starters are concerned, but there's such a significant gap in the hitting. Those top three guys, Martin, Scott, and Blade are, you know, they're the difference. Like, that's the gap that we have to make up. And the way that you do it, I assume, is the way that we have been doing it, which is, you know, catching the ball when we need to catch the ball and them, you know, finding holes where they ain't, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm looking at this team the way I would want. You got Kumar Rocker, who, like we said, like, can hit like 95 miles an hour all the time, but he does get wild sometimes. And when he's on, it's over. You're dead. But like, if he's not on, you can get on base, and Michigan can run on these guys. I mentioned before that there's like a lot of teams that just kind of use different guys as catchers, yeah. Not really catchers. And Vandy is definitely one of them. They've got Clark, Duvall, and Scott have all been kind of rotating in that position this year.
This feels like a position where if you've got two catchers, you don't have one.
Well, they have three.
Well, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, whichever one we get, none of them have been particularly good defensively this year. They're all great hitters.
So if you're on, you're probably going.
Yeah, so like, you know, work those 12-pitch walks and convert it and hope that your starting pitchers can hold down a lineup that's probably the scariest in college baseball. No problem.
I mean, the bottom of this lineup has been doing it in the like, teams have been actually holding Blade and Martin fairly in check in the World Series, and then the rest of the lineup's just been killing them.
I mean, it, like, we keep getting to these championship games in various sports, and we're always kind of like, we're probably not going to win this one.
Yeah, you know? I wrote down Villanova, but it was like the first note that I had on these guys.
I mean, that's what happens when you get this far. It doesn't really matter the sport, right? I mean, that's just kind of what's going
to
happen.
I guess it'd be nice to like get into one of these and be like, "Oh, we should win this."
It would be lovely,
but it would be just fine to win this, even though we're the underdogs, and it's baseball, as yeah. Billy Beane famously said, "My shit doesn't work in the playoffs." So, hopefully, we can benefit from that fact. Thank you, Colin. You were excellent guest. Thanks for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, good to be here. Great.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest in HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop with different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
I'm worried about what you're going to say here, but
what?
I asked if you had a barbecue hot take, and you, like, jumped like you had
something. I have many barbecue hot takes.
All right, so do you have a specific barbecue hot take?
You seem afraid that my fuego is going to overcome.
Your reaction when I said that I was gonna ask you something about this suggested to me that you were about to, like, make people angry with your
barbecue hot take or something. So my barbecue hot take this week is that the South has got it all wrong.
No one's going to be angry about that.
And I say this because the best barbecue restaurant in America is called Ricewood, and it is in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And the trick is they give you your barbecue. One, it's salted, so okay, you can eat it without the sauce, which doesn't happen at a lot of barbecue places. And two, it's on a bed of sushi rice, which is an amazing choice because, you know, a lot of barbecue sauces are very vinegary because you want to lighten up, you want to brighten that palate with some acid. And to put that in the rice with some scallions, nicely chopped, and then to get the barbecue exactly right on top of it, well, that's something that the South just can't match, my friend.
Was that hot enough for you? I have a feeling the South is not usually putting it on rice.
That's right.
Or
probably like putting it next to some grits. Like, you don't need mac and cheese when you're eating barbecue because the barbecue is already bringing all the richness to the party. You don't need.
I usually go for a potato.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so the sushi rice is a brilliant alternative to just heaping more richness on your plate. Dave looks incensed. Well, if you can tolerate that kind of hot take, my friend, maybe you should get yourself a Fuego box. How it works, every month they scour the globe for the best hot sauces. From hundreds of sauces, they find the best of the best, and the best chosen hot sauces get shipped right to your door. Go to fuegobox.com. MGOBLOG10 is the code you need to enter for your
$10 off.
$10 off.
There you go.
There you go. And then
Come to Ann Arbor and have the best.
Go to Ricewood and put some of this hot sauce on it. I'm not opposed to sauce. I just think that barbecue should be edible without sauce.
I'm just very surprised that the best barbecue in the world is in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
I mean,
why am I surprised?
I don't know that for a fact. I haven't been to every barbecue place, but I lived in Texas for 4 months. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
But it wasn't sublime.
Okay.
What? You wanted people a hot from, take. You wanted a hot
people
take.
People from the South, you can at Brian at MGOBLOG.
Yes, yes. Please at me about these barbecue hot takes because I got my blocking finger itchy. It's itchy.
So continuing on to our next
segment. Do we have a segment? Yeah, we're doing a segment about the future of the baseball program.
Ah, yes, the future.
So I can be back now?
You can be back now.
Oh, good.
You didn't have any barbecue hot takes?
He doesn't have any hot takes.
No, I thought I wasn't supposed to talk during that.
That's
which is why you got faces.
Well, yes. I don't know why you ever think you're supposed to talk.
Oh,
sorry.
It is a visual podcast.
You're always so mean to me.
I'm glad that we got that off during the EDSBS one, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Michigan is probably going to lose Coffin. They're probably going to lose Brewer. They're probably going to lose Henry.
Henry.
Because those are all highly drafted juniors.
Right. And then they'll lose three key seniors.
Three key seniors. They get Criswell back.
Yes.
They get...
Wogu?
They get Wogu back.
They'll get their outfield back. Like, well, I wouldn't be surprised...
Well, Brewer will be gone.
Right. But I wouldn't be surprised if Wogu would slide in. I mean, if he's going to play baseball somewhere, he's probably going to play in the field at some point. And, like, what's he... I mean, he's going to play a position. He moves like an athlete.
Yeah.
I'm sure he can play. He looks like he could have an arm.
I mean, he might be a first baseman or something.
I think he could play in the outfield.
He could play in the field.
Yeah.
But, you know, kind of more to the point, Michigan is recruiting in a way that kind of can put them on the periphery of being a contender. Like the class from 2 years ago, I think, was not top 20 quite, but top 25-ish. And then they, of course, brought in Velasquez this year, who's a top 100 guy to most sites. They have, by some rights, the top guy in Michigan, Colin, very Polish last name. We need Ace.
Miss you, Ace.
We need Ace. Actually, Anthony Fenich had a really good article because he knows the family, and so he was there on draft day, and he was a guy who, like, if he wasn't going to be going to college at the University of Michigan, probably would have been a fairly high draft pick and signed.
Kachowski. Colin Kachowski.
So they have guys coming through who might be able to maintain this. And I think most critically, over the past 3-4 days, we've had articles in the news and Free Press about Chris Fetter, who is the pitching coach and was a pitcher for Michigan the last time they made the Super Regional back in 2007, who spent some time with the Dodgers, came back home, and it really seems like if Michigan pays him in a reasonable fashion and he's not going to get like a life-changing amount of money from moving jobs, that he'll be around for the long haul.
It also seemed like he was a driver of some of the analytical stuff too.
Yes, he was a guy who was already fairly into analytics as a player, and then with the Dodgers, he really got into that side of the game.
It also sounds like he wants to do more of that. So yeah. Hopefully this run will inspire Michigan to double down on this stuff and do whatever they need to do to improve it.
And then Bakich himself seemed pretty emphatic about the fact that he was not interested in looking for other jobs.
Yeah.
And right now there's no jobs that are significant that are open.
Yeah, the FSU job came and went. It was went to his son.
And Notre Dame's open, but like that would be the only other school that you would look at to be like, okay, you know. And he basically have to do what he's done already there.
Right. And he turned down Stanford. He's not going to go to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think at this point the schools that you'd have to worry about for Bakich would be like Vandy or Clemson, both of which he's coached at, and both of which are just inherently going to have more of a national championship profile because of where they're located.
Right.
But short of that, I think Michigan gets to keep him, and that's – we should give Dave Brandon props.
Is that a first? Is this a first?
I don't know if it's quite a first because we liked how he handled the NCAA investigation.
Okay.
So he did do a good job like getting Michigan through that.
That's like the one scenario where you actually need a Dave Brandon.
Right. No, he was the right man for that job and no other job.
You need a real asshole just to come in and
have a thin veneer of contempt, yes.
Right.
But Bakich was a hire where it's like you got him away from Maryland, which I think is a pretty impressive like ability to like grab a guy because they have better weather than Michigan.
I guess.
And I think at the time they were in the ACC, so yeah. it was a little bit of a oh really I didn't think that we would be able to get that kind of guy, and obviously he's been the man. So
and like this isn't I don't th- I mean this run has been crazy, obviously. But it's not like Michigan was terrible the last few years. Like, they won the Big Ten tournament a few years ago, made the tournament, pushed Louisville a little ways as the in the regionals. And then they had a really good team, I think, 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year, and just kind of fell off in the second half of the season.
Yeah,
and it looked like they were almost on track to maybe host a regional probably halfway through the season, and then things just kind of went south.
Yeah, and I think that's a thing that's always going to happen, especially when you've got a depth of talent that like a Vandy doesn't. Like, we're not at that level.
Right.
So when Michigan has some injuries or they have some guys who aren't playing right, there's not necessarily that ability to pick that guy up by bringing a guy from the bullpen. So wild swings are kind of going to be a thing, but you know, if Michigan is able to maintain their coaching staff, get a bit of a recruiting bump from the World Series run, and just kind of...
Yeah, I mean, Backage is already a world-class recruiter. He was the recruiting coordinator at Vanderbilt when he was right there. And, like, he recruited David Price. Like, he's been in on the top guys. And Michigan, just because of how baseball works, like, you have to spend 3 years there, or you can only give half the guys on the team, or less than half the guys on the team, a scholarship. Academics really do help a lot. Because, like,
academics
that's
help
the
a
thing
lot.
You're getting out of
and
it.
And if you can recruit guys who are not frequently baseball players these days because of socioeconomic issues. As mentioned, the Go Blue Guarantee is you can just give them their tuition and you can just have them on the team. So that's another aspect of why Michigan's approach has been pretty smart, is they're finding these athletes who can become baseball players after a year or two of apprenticeship like Nwogu, and they're able to stretch those scholarship dollars a little bit further. And I think that's probably a permanent advantage for Michigan in the way that it is for Vandy, because Vandy has financial aid coming out their butts.
Right.
And Michigan can do a similar thing where they can stretch that scholarship dollar so they have 20 functional scholarships instead of 12.
And that'll go a ways. A couple of these guys, Craig Ross sent me some names and some of his takes on them, but he says that Damone Hale is coming in next year and could potentially start at either third base or right field. He's supposedly a five-star from California, so they're getting guys from around the country. There's a guy from Brother Rice, Antonio Flores, is pretty highly rated. Both these guys, I think, are known for their defense, too. There's also a guy who didn't get many at-bats this year, but hit 368 last year, which is obviously pretty good. Clemente, I think he pinch hit at the end of that Texas Tech game, but he hasn't played as much this year, but was really good last year. So I think there are some guys that can come in and fill those spots. I don't think they need to fill a ton of them. We saw when Thomas and Blomgren both got hurt, Riley Bertram made a start in, I believe it was the regionals, and played a little bit of second base and shortstop. Looked all right defensively, very small sample size, but he hit decently well for his few at-bats. And so you figure he probably slides into one of those spots, and then you still have Blomgren at short. So, you know, I think that they'll return enough. You know, it sucks to lose your number one player and then a bunch of seniors, but, you know, that's going to happen when you're good. And I think they have guys that will be able to slide in and at least spot hold, if nothing else.
Well, I mean, they don't have to worry about a Friday night starter next year.
Well, right, yeah.
So that's...
And they have guys, they have a pitcher coming in, like you said, they have other guys. Now, I'm not really sure how college baseball works in terms of, like, if you're a freshman and you, like, are a reliever, you know, can you become a starter next year? I know that that'll happen sometimes in the minor leagues.
Well, oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, Criswell was a reliever until halfway through last year, and there was their starting pitcher, Ben Dragani, went out with Tommy John surgery, and
right, he
missed all this year.
So he'll be back.
So if he is – and he was actually pitching really well before he went out. So if he's able to reacquire that, then you could have another 1-2 punch at that starter spot, and then you just have to find one or two more starters and then have some semblance of a bullpen. And, you know, it's if they could just, like, make the tournament next year, like, not even have to host a regional, but maybe, like, just be there and, like, maintain and just kind of, like, get to the tournament 3-4 straight years – and, like, hopefully you have another run, and then maybe you can leverage the fact that Michigan is a really good university and start getting some guys. Like, they're never going to be a powerhouse because just the way the season works.
Right.
But, like, maybe you could push it back another couple weeks, that kind of thing, or just...
Like, yeah, they're never going to be able to push that, but, like, I mean unless the North leaves. You could be the Gonzaga of college baseball. And I mean, they can...
I mean, the Big Ten isn't terrible. I mean, like, you know, you have teams that make the tournament, and
the Big Ten has been getting much better.
Right. Yeah. It used to be like us in Minnesota for a little while, and like back when you were referencing when Michigan was good about a decade ago.
Well, but they had four teams make the tournament this year. And
right.
That's like for much of the previous, I'd say, 20 years, Michigan was basically a one bid mid major, and now that
the Big Ten.
Right, and now they're kind of like the A-10 of college basketball, of college baseball.
Yeah, I mean, Indiana's made the
CWS.
Yeah, they did a few years ago. Illinois had a really good year 2 or 3 years ago, and then got beat. I think in I don't know if it was the regionals or
and OSU's decent now,
and Nebraska almost won the Big Ten this year too. They were I think finished right around Michigan 2 or 3. So I mean, they have some teams that are. It's not. A complete pushover. There are some teams that you can beat and get some RPI bumps, but it's certainly not some of those other conferences.
Yeah,
they're always going to have to recruit and have to deal with the fact that they just can't play home games.
Yeah, but I think that the institution allows them to overcome some of that in a similar way to like where Stanford, like there are just certain football players who are just railed to Stanford because that's what they want.
Yeah.
And I feel like Michigan can get some guys based on
that. I think they can. It's just from a fan standpoint... I mean, you know, Colin is a huge baseball fan, enough that he's been following this for a long time, and he didn't even get to watch most of the games this year because they're not on TV, and, like, you can't go to home games. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is if you do get, like, the South-North split, like, you get, like, how much BTN content is that? Like, it really seems like there's a compelling case.
There is a hugely compelling case.
It, like, if Michigan does win the national title, that would be the time to do it. Just like,
like mic drop it?
Yes.
Well, for example, we're sitting here recording this, and what's on BTN right now? Wisconsin-Penn State football from, I don't even know what year.
It's this year. They're doing a bunch of Penn State games.
Exactly. And they could be showing what? We could be sitting at Ray Fisher right now in a very nice evening.
That's the thing that's getting me, is like the weather has been absolutely gorgeous for the past week. And there will never be a baseball game in Ann Arbor.
In June. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, honestly,
Minnesota's coach is down for it, too. Like, he made some comments recently.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if they just push it back 2-3 weeks, it would be a huge difference.
The reason it's like this is because the South knows what they're doing, and they've been pushing it back.
I mean, I know.
Yeah.
But, like, so there are things that the South wants, and the Big Ten can team up with some smaller programs and be like, we're not going to vote for this unless you move the season back. So, I mean, that's the only leverage you have, I guess.
So you're saying, regardless of what happens this week, if they make the NCAA tournament, that's your goal next year?
Yeah, I mean, like the last time this happened in 07, Maloney couldn't keep it going.
Yeah.
And, you know, it kind of feels different this time because of the way Michigan is recruiting. Kind of year in, year out, they're getting a couple of dudes, and they're able to fill in some blanks because Baca just really pounded the trail.
And 2 years ago, didn't they have a ton of draft picks? They had like 10 or 11 draft picks.
Yeah, I mean, they've been on another level in terms of their talent from before.
Right, that's really what's going to keep this going, is are you getting players that can continually produce?
Yep. All right, well, bright future, hopefully.
It's nice we get to add some names and faces to like the pantheon of Michigan ball players instead of just like, hey, remember when Jim Abbott and Barry Larkin were here?
Yeah.
Like, it's been a long time since we've had those guys.
Rich Hill is still pitching for the Dodgers.
Yep. And Hal Morris went to Michigan, right?
And Putnam had a cup
of like
coffee.
30 guys who played first base for the Tigers that year.
Wasn't there a Michigan guy who came up as like a third baseman recently?
Adam Abraham.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he ever did anything.
And JJ Putz was a Michigan guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. All right. We're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about soccer.
I under protest.
Here's the thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess. You use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage them with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
So, folks, this is what you get when there's a podcast on June 23rd.
This has got to be. Have we had just football recruiting podcast?
We might have, yeah.
We've done a football recruiting.
Have we ever done a podcast in June?
No.
I mean, usually that.
The Alumni Association asked us to come on one time. We sat like outside of their golf outing.
Oh, is that when everybody asked us where the bathroom was?
Yes. A memorable professional podcast.
There are really good outtakes from that.
Yeah. That's when we had Bruce Mate on and he just dunked on us.
The best top five it was like, things right. you're proud
what
of.
Was the gimmicky top five? It was like things from our childhood that we thought were cool.
That you should be proud of that you are.
That you are.
Of. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And yeah. He was like, oh, I started a boxing ring and I took bets.
At Yoast or something.
He invented a sport.
Yeah.
It was just the worst. Because I was like, you know, I buzzed in and I answered a quiz bowl question right at the end. That was literally one of mine. Like, I still remember it was the contract with America. And they said, the Personal Responsibility Act. And I buzzed in. And the timer for the game went off. And then I got to say the contract with America.
Do you think this is going to, like, work better in this podcast? Because,
well,
like, it went over so
Bruce
badly.
Bruce Mate is not here. So I'm not going to get dunked on by either of you guys. Probably. Maybe.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Well, you might have if you'd done a gimmicky top five things you're embarrassed about from your childhood, but instead you guys wanted to talk soccer.
But we already did that on Thursday.
Yeah.
He had to play dodgeball.
It's true. I dropped an F-bomb on TK. We
Sam could feel it coming and is screaming, no, 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 no. And Brian's like, I don't care.
No, I felt terrible. It was just...
I'm ironic that you threw an F-bomb on a day that Ed wasn't there.
I've never dropped an F-bomb on TKA, and that was the thing that made
me... Did you have to, like, take out your wallet, like, that minute, like, here, Sam? Sorry.
No, I think if I do it again, that would be a problem.
Yeah.
But, so we're not, we can't talk about dodgeball anymore, that's forbidden. I've been banned. Anyway,
what have you not been banned from? Soccer.
So, we got two teams doing stuff right now.
We do.
The women's team, and whenever I watch the USWNT, I'm painfully jealous of their wingers, because I'm just like, why can't the men ever do this? Because you have Heath, who's just killing it,
yeah,
and then you have Rapino, and then you know, they'll bring in Press and she'll play the left wing. They just have like this crazy wing depth.
I mean, they're bringing Carly Lloyd off the bench.
Yeah,
she's older, but still,
so you want to manage her minutes,
but still.
But like, so they go up against Sweden, and Sweden is like the big rival.
Oh, that was so overplayed. They're not even in the top, like, six or seven,
but
they're
in the top 10.
Sure.
So this is like, okay, this is going to be their first real test, and it looked like...
No.
It looked like a CONCACAF game, right? Yeah. Where it's just like they have the ball the whole time, and it's just pretty much how many of their shots are they going to score?
Well, if they beat Spain, they'll get a fun test.
France has kind of been scuffling a little bit.
Yeah, but they'll be up for that one.
I mean, I'm sure they'll be
up
for it.
And they have good... I mean, they have Les Omer, who is a very good scorer. And
did Seth just mute himself?
I unmuted
myself.
Seth is here.
Because
there he is.
Maybe the only soccer takes that I possibly have are anything involving France or PSG.
Well, I mean, so one of the interesting things is they took one defensive midfielder in Julie Ertz.
Who used to be a center back.
Right, and she's been kind of in and out of the lineup. She missed the last game.
She's hurt, yeah.
And you don't really know if that's a problem because the U.S. has the ball the whole time.
Also, they have like two of everything.
They do.
So somebody came out and said that. One of the players on the team says, we have the best team here. We also have the second best team here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, maybe.
And there is that controversy about like they're scoring all these goals against Thailand and people are like,
oh, that was my favorite controversy ever.
It was so... So there were many dumb parts about it. One, it was like, would they be doing this if it was the men's team scoring like this? And one, that's never going to happen. Like, I've seen them play Barbados. It's never going
to
happen.
Let's not start actually naming bad teams that the U.S. has lost to.
They played one of the worst teams that they generally are going to play in CONCACAF and put up six, which is not 13.
Yeah, and that was a team that was mostly like USL players.
And that was 1-0 in like the 63rd minute.
I feel really bad for the Thai team because...
Well, so they weren't supposed to be there, right? Like, it was...
They're like the 34th team in the world.
North Korea was supposed to be there, and they didn't, I think, and they weren't allowed to come because of off-the-field stuff.
Various North Korea bits.
Right, so Thailand, like, got the bid.
They had like a 5-1 goalie. You gotta find, like, somebody... there's got to be a 6-foot woman in Thailand, and they should just be like, "Are you 6 feet tall?" And she'd be like, "Yes." Or like,
"You're the cook."
I think. Do you want to go to Paris?
I think Thailand did it perfectly. You got to have these blowouts because people are talking about the game, and like, you know, Rutgers 78-0 is one of the games that we remember.
So this is like
it's true.
This is like some sort of PR for Thailand.
Yeah, and like,
but we know for a fact that if a men's team did run up the score in that kind of fashion and was like, and if they were still celebrating like mad, I mean, people would be like, oh, that's classless, because we get that about everything.
Well, but yes,
the important thing to
the takes are going to come. There's nothing you can do to stop
the takes. But the important thing to remember is that nothing is classless.
Right.
That's within the bounds of the rules.
So would you have scored a 14th goal?
Well, no, I would probably have cramped up.
Would you have had a problem with me scoring a 14th goal?
No, I would not.
Exactly.
No, that's the point of sports. I could get really into this. The best you can. It doesn't matter who's against you. Play your best.
A few days earlier, there was one of the better pitchers in the last decade in baseball, Madison Bumgarner, threw a pitch, and Max Muncy for the Dodgers hit it into the Barry Bonds Cove, and he just kind of took his time walking down to first base, and Bumgarner followed him and was like, just run, don't watch the ball. And Muncy turned to him and said, if you don't want me to watch the ball, go pull it out of the ocean. And like,
that's great.
That's what can you say to that? Like, don't give me one on a tee if you don't want me to hit it 500 feet.
Tell me something bad that's happened from sports getting spicier.
There was that like Clemson South Carolina brawl.
Okay, tell me something. That's just the South, man. That's just like that.
But no. But like, even though that was kind of bad, I liked it.
Yeah.
Didn't Brad Marchand try to kiss somebody? That's kind of spicy.
There was the FIU Miami brawl. One was out of control.
Right, but that's not spiciness. That's actually brawling. Like, you think like they would not brawl?
I guess the point that I'm trying to make is I still liked that anyway. Like, as a just an observer of things.
I'm happy
in the world,
that D'Antonio did his little stunt last year where he like marched the field. I'm like, sweet. Now they're gonna be fired up. And,
yeah,
like
I'm not mad about that. I get to pretend I'm mad about it.
I get to pretend.
Like, you son and so and so's.
So you enjoyed it when he sent a mental message and went for two?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a wonderful that was the best mental message ever. I got it.
I like all spicy things that like lead to like highlight packages the next year that sound like they're introducing a WWE match.
And think of all like the logo changes Michigan State's had. Now they finally have a good one.
Oh, because Bush, I get it.
You want to explain it?
That's like 6 months too late for like anyone to be like, oh. But anyway, the women are completely justified in dunking on whoever they want to dunk. And the thing that I like is that, you know, they're up like 6-0 on Thailand. And it's like, what should I do? I'm going to bring in an offensive sub. And they are up like 4-0 against, who was their second opponent? I forget.
Chile.
And it's like, let's give some more offensive subs. Let's take off a defender and put on this like 6'2" woman who looks really good.
Well, you can't bring in a defender when the ball is in the offensive half.
I mean, they brought in.
Hey, go stand near midfield. Make sure the ball doesn't get over your head.
Name was, I think it's Kelly McDonald. And she looked like she might be like a Wambach heir apparent. And I can't tell you how awesome it was to watch Abby Wambach just like headed in over like entire villages of people.
5-1 goalies.
Yes, just being out there being like a patriotic Godzilla of goals. I loved that. And I crave it.
So what's your take on the knockouts then? What do you see happening?
Well, I mean, I think the U.S. is playing better than anybody else by a wide margin, and they have the kind of depth where, you know, they're going to be able to weather injury suspensions. They're going to be able to rotate a lot, and I think they're set up really well to win it. Obviously, France is going to be a test, but I mean, they've been playing better than France in this tournament.
Germany, have you seen any of Germany?
I have not.
I've seen a little bit. I mean, they don't give up goals. They don't really give up shots.
They're very German.
Yeah.
Well, when
but they don't score a ton, I don't
when
think.
When Tobin Heath's bearing down on you, you'll find what you're made out of. I just once, I would like the men's team to have a winger at all, like any of the women wingers. It's just, wait, they might have.
I think they do.
Because Tyler Boyd has come off the New Zealand list, and he filed a one-time switch, and now he's a U.S. player. And he's probably been the best player in the two Gold Cup games, if you...
Yeah, I mean, what does that mean? But yeah.
Well, sure. I think it gives the U.S. a really interesting dynamic because Pulisic usually plays on the wing for his club, but he's able to come inside as a 10.
Is he not a winger that can be
same caliber? We haven't seen him play for the U.S. very much.
I mean, that's true.
He basically hasn't played since Kuva, and like, so yes, it has a shot. But as I was trying to say, so you have Pulisic playing as a 10. And then you have Areola on the left wing and Boyd on the right wing. And Boyd is coming in all the time. And Areola is right-footed, so he cuts in too. So you have this ability to naturally interchange your wingers. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a real – like it produced a ton of danger against Trinidad. And, you know, Boyd, people kind of got on him for being a little bit wasteful against Trinidad. But I want that guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I want the guy who's going to come in and find the pocket of space and then rip off a shot. You know, I'd like him to maybe find a couple more passes here and there. But he had, what, 6 assists in Turkey over the past half year? So it's not like he's incapable of sending other guys up. And To me, he just kind of brings that Dempsey edge where he just tries stuff. Hmm. And we haven't had that since Dempsey.
Since Dempsey.
And even like, you know, the late Dempsey was not, you know, prime Dempsey.
Right.
So he's a really exciting. Like, you get all these like one-time switch guys and it's kind of like, he's not as much of a help as I was hoping he would be. And after two caps, it looks like Boyd is definitely going to be that guy.
What did you see in McKennie?
Well, McKennie, I've been surprised by how his vision is. Like,
he's only 20, right?
He's only 20, and he's playing at Schalke, and Schalke is just kind of a mess.
Okay.
So they were kind of close to being relegated. They're a team that is usually at least in contention for Champions League spots.
Yeah, I mean, when Jermaine Jones was there, they were solid.
But this year, they're just all over the place, and McKennie, he played midfield, he played striker, he played central defense, he played right back. He played everywhere because they just had nothing other than him.
So he played soccer.
Yeah, but like, so he hasn't really settled into one position, and so, you know, he was pretty bad his first couple of caps in this camp, and I'm feeling like, I don't know about this. But then, you know, he has the assist on the first goal against Guyana where he plays in Areola, and his ability to pick out penetrating passes, I think, has been a real positive. And he's obviously he's got an engine. He covers a lot of ground. And then one of the things that I don't think we've seen yet for the national team, but was pretty clear if you were watching some of his all-touch videos, which is something that I think it's called USMNT videos, posts a lot of those.
Okay.
And he has been dominant in the air, especially as a midfielder. Think of the Man United Belgian guy, Fellaini.
Oh, gosh.
So he's not quite at that level, but like, he gets up for it, and he really challenges and is really effective in the air. And I think that's something that I think will pay dividends going forward on set pieces. And especially when you get a successful high press and somebody just kind of lofts a ball up, you need to win that ball. And I think McKennie is a really good guy to go do that.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the disappointing thing to me with this is that there's like four or five guys I'd really like to see on this team, and some are like injured or whatever, but they seem to have a really interesting young core of guys, and then some veterans like a Brooks or a Yedlin who have played well in the past, and then, you know, the other young guys like Sargent, which I was kind of like wondering.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think everybody was kind of like, yeah, what is going on with that?
Because and even Weah. Too.
Well, Weah wanted to play on the U-20 team.
But, okay, that's fine. But I'm just saying, like, those are guys you kind of want to see play with this team, with Pulisic, with McKennie, with Boyd. Like,
I mean,
that's...
So, personally, I'm a really big Areola fan.
Okay.
Like, I think I rate him more than a lot of USA fans, just because he's a runner. Like, he's going to, in the 85th minute, if you need him to run back 60 yards to cover up a potential breakaway, he's going to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And like, you know, not Michigan, I do that all the time. The U.S. just needs guys who are going to be that kind of old style U.S. player where it's, you're in Honduras and it's 90 degrees.
Graham Zusi versus Mexico.
I was actually thinking about like Frankie Hajduk.
There's only going to be one Frankie
Hajduk. Well, yeah, but like Frankie Hajduk, like, was, you know, he had a lead foot and he was not that skilled of a guy. But, you know, in the 87th minute against in Honduras when it's 97 degrees out and you need a goal, well, he's going to rush in and he's going to still be able to jump over a Honduran guy.
Well, he's like, what, one of three Americans that have passed the beep test or whatever?
Yeah. So, I mean, just you need some horses. And that's the disappointing thing about not having Adams.
Yeah,
because Adams like kind of flashed that ability to have that long range passing in the Bundesliga, and Bradley just came back from injury. But the way that they're playing with him as a single guy trying to cover for the defense, I think will get them in trouble when they do it against better teams.
Yeah,
because he's just not the player he used to be. I mean, if you remember like early Michael Bradley, where you could just tell he was going to get a yellow card. Like, it was just like, oh, here's the yellow card, because he's covering ground and he's just not giving up, and he's got this bite in the midfield where he's just a tough person to play against, and that really does not feel like the case anymore. He's still got his assets. He's
a good distributor.
He's a good distributor. He played a beautiful ball for a hockey assist on the Zardes goal to open
to Lima,
up.
Right?
Yeah, and I thought he was late when he got it over to Boyd against Guyana for his goal.
Yes.
But even though he was late, he still picked up his head, found the pass, and hit that kind of beautiful ping that curves right into his path. And even though it's late, it was enough for him to work with. So he's a guy who obviously has value, but you can't just leave him by himself and expect that back line to be adequately covered.
Well, a couple of years ago, they put Acosta next to him, right? And I thought it kind of revived a little bit of their midfield.
You know, the best that he's looked as a U.S. player is kind of that just before the first World Cup, well, the only Klinsmann World Cup, and they put Beckerman in the lineup.
Yeah.
And Beckerman was just the shield, and then Bradley and Jones had the ability to go find the game, and that looked really good for the brief period of time where it was feasible, and then Beckerman.
So more of an eight than six.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem is, though, that, okay, if he's the eight, you're taking McKennie off.
Yeah.
And that's just not going to happen. So, like, how much longer is Bradley going to be in this lineup, and how much longer is it going to be, like, they're playing a 4-1-4-1?
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And they're playing Tim Ream for... I mean,
this is my thing, is like there are guys that would be interesting to see, guys like John Brooks. I mean, if they had Brooks there with instead of Ream, all of a sudden it's a little more interesting.
Well, so I mean, I don't know if there's a reason to go with the third center back on the left, except for the fact that you don't really have a left back. Like, who's your left back? I have no idea, because you played Villafana.
How old's Beasley? Where's Fabian? Fabian was probably the last good left back.
I mean, and he was a very offensive player who got a lot of cover from guys like Beckerman. So like as a two-way left back.
But that's soccer a lot of times these days.
I mean, it might have been Doyle said that Lima should be the left back, and then you could bring in Yedlin or Reggie Cannon. So you just have a little bit more skill, a little bit more speed out there, and then you don't have that one time in every Tim Ream game where he almost gives away a goal.
Right.
Which is just like, how does that happen every time?
I mean, that was Taylor Twelman said that, and I was like, that's pretty on point.
I can't understand. Like,
I think that's the part that makes this Gold Cup, like, it's interesting, and I want to get back into it and like it used to be a few years ago, but like it's kind of frustrating because there's four or five guys that I think would make this team a lot more fun. Like I said, a couple injured, what are you going to do? It's a little disappointing.
Yeah, I mean having Brooks and Adams healthy and available, I'm not like that broken up about not having Yedlin. He's fine, but like he'd probably be the Tim Ream.
If Tim Ream wasn't there.
No, I mean, like, what I'm saying is, like, I don't know if I really rate him a lot going forward, but he's a good individual defender, and he'll run for days. So, like, he'd probably be in that kind of, like, not that offensive outside back role, which would be an improvement, and I'd be fine with that. But I don't think it's, like, a game changer.
Yeah.
And having a Brooks might be a game changer. Having an Adams, I think, probably would be.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if Boyd continues playing like this, that's massive. That's like getting a grad transfer.
So it's like the weird thing is that they won't. I mean, they're going to play Panama next,
yep.
Right? And then they're going to play the runner-up from Group C, which is going to be either El Salvador or Jamaica. And then after that, they're going to play either El Salvador or Jamaica or Panama again, because they don't cross the bracket. So they're not going to see Costa Rica, and they're not going to see Mexico until the final. They can't. So, I mean, you would hope that even though there have been some scuffles in the past few weeks and they maybe haven't looked the greatest until late in the games and their tune-ups weren't great, but like you'd hope that this team could at least get to the final.
Yeah, well, I mean, Jamaica's got some dudes now.
Yeah?
Like, they have a couple of guys who are potentially going to be breaking through at major European clubs. And they don't have that depth through the roster, but they do have a lot of good MLS players, so they're no joke. You know, I think that the U.S. hopefully should beat them when they have even close to an
right.
Strength line.
I would hope that,
but like I think that, you know, I don't know how much of a difference there is between Jamaica and Costa Rica right now, just because Costa Rica kind of had that golden generation that kind of has started to phase out, and I don't know if they've been able to pick it up. I'm not saying that they haven't. I'm just not entirely sure.
Well, and they don't have Navas, right? He decided not to play, I don't think.
Well, I mean, so. I mean, that's one thing, but it's just like, you know, Brian Ruiz and like
who's the defender? Torres. Like they had some guys who were really good players, and I think they're kind of in a transitional stage. And then Mexico, their lineup is not their A lineup.
Yeah, Anthony was keep telling me they're down like 9 starters or something.
Well, Mexico is in a good spot that the U.S. is not in, where they have a pretty deep pool right now, where like you could leave out 4, 5, or 6 guys and replace them, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. Hmm. And with the U.S., as soon as Pulisic doesn't hit the field, it's just like, now it's Christian Roldan.
Yeah.
So it's the U.S. really needs their U20 team to like start coming through with some caps and pushing into the 23, if not necessarily the 11, just because, or like right now, I mean, the depth is awful. Like, what happens if Bradley goes out? Oh, it's Will Trapp. Like,
where's Acosta?
Acosta, he moved to Colorado, and he's kind of playing an 8-10 for them, and, you know, he's an interesting guy. The guy who I feel probably should have been called in is Nagby, but if you're just going to be playing McKennie in that spot the whole time, then it's like, I mean, Nagby's just a backup.
Yeah.
Because he's not a 6.
Yeah.
So no. But they don't really have a true, like, ball-winning 6.
Who was the other guy you kept talking about before? Kitchen? Or is he...
He was a defensive midfielder who kind of, like, who never really panned
never
out.
Never really panned out.
I was talking up Chris Durkin, but he was terrible in the 20s. He was awful. He looked like pretty much the same problem with Trapp, where it's just like he doesn't have the physicality to do it. He's not fast enough. He's not mean enough. But, you know, the rest of the U20 team was like, yeah. Like, Paxton Pomykal, that dude can get it. Like he's the kind of, like, 8-10, like that could be in the McKennie role. And he's a very offensively oriented player, but, like, when he does not have the ball, he's a bulldog. Hmm. So he's a guy who I think could come through. And then Serginho Dest, who had a terrible opening game against the Ukraine. He was pretty much directly responsible for the first goal on a really bad piece of positioning. But in the knockout round games against France and Ecuador, he was probably the U.S.'s best player. I mean, and they had a lot of interplay on that side. There was a goal against Nigeria where he had a really great interplay with Conrad De La Fuente, who was pretty bad. And then they were able to like break some pressure and like pass it out, and then they were able to finish it. So Dest is a dude. Chris Richards, the center back, is a dude. Like Gloucester, he's a left back, so he's got a shot.
So, and it feels like, what, 2011-12 like, all over again?
Yeah, I mean, the difference is that this U20 team had, I think, like 6 or 8 guys who are either getting MLS starts or they're like Weston frickin' McKennie who were eligible who didn't play. Hmm. And that has not been the case. There's been like maybe 1 or 2 sometimes. But if you look at the U20 age pool, there has never been a U20 set of players that Ramos had to choose from anywhere near this. So this is when the academy shift in MLS starts paying off. So you're seeing a lot of homegrowns come through. FC Dallas is starting like 5 or 6 guys who are under 21.
Hmm.
Not all the time, but periodically.
Okay.
And they just signed a 16-year-old kid who's tearing it up in USL. Like, there are finally, like, people talk about how the U.S.'s development system is busted, but they never kind of explain why the U.S. can be the best development system in the world for women and not be anywhere near that for men. And the reason is just money. So the U.S. has spent more money on women's soccer than any country in the world by probably a million miles.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Just because of Title IX, right?
Yeah.
And there hasn't been that, okay, if I develop this soccer player, I can sell him. You haven't had that motivation for anyone to like put together serious academies of players who you can go sell for $3-4 million. I mean, Chris Richards went over for $1.5 million as a 17-year-old, and like, you know, FC Dallas lost out on McKennie for nothing. So now you're seeing the MLS teams. They changed the rule, so now they get solidarity payments. And a solidarity payment is when you sell a guy, some percentage, I think it's 5% of the selling price, goes to the clubs he had when he was young. So if you were in the IAX Academy and then you went somewhere else and then you're 25 and you get sold to China, IAX still gets a chunk of that. So that wasn't the case in MLS. MLS didn't support that regime because they didn't want to pay like youth clubs. And that's still something that they're trying not to do. But they finally are like, okay, we're producing enough players that this is worth it for us. Hmm. And that's a sea change. And that's not going to be necessarily evident in this Gold Cup. But 2 years from now in the next one, yes. Like 2 years from now in the next one, this is going to look like an entirely different roster. And, you know, the guys that people are mad about being on the fringe right now, like Omar Gonzalez and Trapp and Zardes, are just not going to be in the picture anymore.
Speaking of Zardes, was that the most Zardes try for a hat trick?
What? He hit the post? How mad?
He
hit the post, and then his follow-up header was low and hard, and the goalie just did a good job at it.
But it was just funny because he hits the outside of the post, somehow stays in play, which is very almost impossible to do. Then there's a great save, and he gets a third crack and kicks it in a row cue.
I mean,
two of those were good
attempts to finish.
It was very funny.
I mean, so the Zardes thing is that people just get on him because, you know, he has a touch like a donkey sometimes. And he's played on the wing, which he's not a winger at all. But it's not just the fact that he's the only American who's scoring any goals anywhere, because that's true other than Pulisic. Like
No one else is scoring goals. All right.
Bobby Wood isn't scoring goals. Or Andrew Wooten, who's playing in like the 16 Bundesliga.
Josie isn't scoring goals.
Josie can't even get on the field consistently because he's hurt so much.
Yeah. Well, so he's also old. Well,
he's like the only dude out there who's consistently scoring. And the thing about him is he runs.
Yeah.
And if you go back and you look at the Pulisic goal against Trinidad and Tobago, his gravity as he runs outside of Morris pulls away the center back. And he just consistently does a lot of things that are really good that you only notice if you're giving him a chance.
Okay.
And so many U.S. fans are not.
You just have already written him off because of previous struggles.
Right. And it's like, there's a reason that he scores goals. And like, even though like his first goal against Trinidad was basically a tap in.
Right.
Like if you watch the way that whole sequence plays out, he knows exactly what's going to happen and where he needs to be. And he gets there. And how many times do you see that ball fizz across the front of the net and someone is unable to get to
not
the ball.
Not there or in bad position.
So,
well, his second goal was, I mean, that was very nice. I mean,
that was well taken.
Yeah. I mean, that was, he had one small touch, half a step, and then he shot it and put it in the corner.
But that's not like who he is.
No.
Who he is the guy who gets on the end of those crosses where he's just going to tap it in. It's like, oh, it's just a tap in. But then you go back and you look at the goal and it's like, okay, he runs. And
you have to, I mean, someone has to be there.
Yeah. His off the ball rating in Football Manager is very good.
Okay.
He's got great pace. He's got great endurance. His first touch is donkey level.
Yeah.
But he's got assets, and that's why he scores goals. And I don't want him to be the striker at the World Cup, but if you're telling me there's someone out there who's obviously better than him right now, you're wrong. And I would have liked to see Sargent in this tournament.
I think
just like everybody else.
That's the thing. It's like,
especially because, like, okay, you can't even put Josie out there because he's not fully fit.
Yeah.
And you're not taking a third striker. Like,
right.
That's a problem.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's like every time we've seen Sargent in the youth big tournaments, he's looked pretty good. And, you know, why not, especially in this pool, why not give him a chance?
I mean, the only thing I can think of is they think it's a pivotal season for him at Werder Bremen, and they just want to send him back.
So what?
I mean,
okay, but like...
I mean, he's a guy who's kind of on the verge of the first team there.
You want to see him play with Pulisic. You want to see him play with McKinney. You want to see him play with, you know, Boyd's coming on. Like,
I do. I'm just saying, like, that's kind of the devil's advocate thing. But like...
Yeah.
I have some problems with some stuff that's going on, like Tim Ream and not having Sargent on. But the whole attitude in the USA fan base is still just poisoned by everything that happened over the past 3 years.
Well, I mean, you have to expect that to an extent, right?
Like, yeah, it's just the takes that result are pretty tough to, like, just...
It's kind of like
just
our
drive by
job, right?
Well, yeah, it feels a lot like Michigan football, and that's never a good thing.
So you just did it again.
What did I do? I didn't do anything.
It's never a good thing. Maybe it'll be a better thing this year.
To date, it has not been a good thing.
Seth wrote an article about how it's going to be a better thing this year.
Did he?
Oh, yeah. Josh Gattis offense.
Oh.
You didn't want to do a segment on this. I was ready to talk about it.
Were you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I thought this was a very productive segment, Seth.
I think I
especially
spent most of it
like the way you didn't talk.
Oh. Boo.
I'm
now
sorry.
You're just shooting at me and Seth.
All right.
Who else do you want to insult?
I already had a rough weekend.
I've already done the whole South, so I think I've got my quota up. Ricewood, baby. It's sublime. They're not a sponsor. I'm just doing this.
You know what? You know how you can make it back to me? Tell everybody to get their information to me for Hail the Victors.
Hey, everybody, get your information to Seth for Hail the Victors. Otherwise, he will have to hunt you down with a machete and use that machete to write your address on a piece of driftwood.
Email or tweet, or how are they supposed to get you their info?
They have their way. They have in their email inboxes. In their inboxes, right. There is a survey that they can take, and if they're a shirt backer, they can take those links.
You know my favorite thing about the Kickstarter every year?
Huh.
Is
that I handle it for you?
You know my second favorite thing about the Kickstarter every year? My second favorite thing about the Kickstarter every year is that once we put it up, we get a bunch of responses on previous Kickstarter surveys.
Yes. Yes.
Where I'm just like, I could tell them, but they'll figure it out. Maybe.
I actually check those to make sure like they're not any of the people who like didn't fill out this year.
Yeah.
But Kickstarter is like serious. Like when you don't fill out that survey and you go back in there, they're like, big red ribbon, fill out your survey.
I have one of those.
What year did you fill out?
No, for another Kickstarter?
It was for a different Kickstarter.
Oh, okay.
And it was like something where I'm just really donating. I don't actually want the thing very much.
So as somebody who works in who has to fulfill Kickstarters, it's helpful to email that person and say, pick me up a list.
Email Seth, everybody who stayed tuned for the soccer part of our podcast. This will be very helpful.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm David Nasternak, along with Brian Cook and Seth Fisher, and we just got Brian Cook to talk about baseball.
I guess there's only one thing left to do. What's that? Win the whole fucking thing.